I want to challenge some mindsets for any golfer, particularly guys who just go out on the weekends. You got to understand for a second here that the golf architect who designed that course intended to challenge you to expose your weakness by the placement of the bunkers, the water hazards, or even the sloping putting greens. So you got to understand going into that and expect the challenge, not be concerned about it, actually be excited about what kind of challenges am I going to experience on this course. Then prepare yourself mentally. Think about, instead of being shocked to have mental challenges when you play, expect them to happen and be ready for them. And not only that, be excited about that. And then you need to apply some mental tactics with that.
Golf Smarter number 776. Imagine how being 1% better each round can turn your doubt inside out with Carrie Valentine.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Carrie.
Aloha, Fred. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, it's great to hear aloha here in January, where everybody else is thinking about the warm weather and not experiencing it, but you're sharing it with us by bringing your warmth from the islands. Thank you.
That's very sweet. Appreciate that, Fred.
Of course. So each year when we get together, you have been in a really awesome position where you bring us audio tape of PGA Tour players that you've talked to when they come to Hawaii on the tour about their mental game. But it's not happening this year.
Yes, unfortunately, due to COVID, as we know, PGA is doing the tournaments without the public and the fans allowed in. So I tried my very best. I volunteer at these events as well. And the areas of which I volunteer were also tailored out for this year. So just got to wait till either later in the season when I'll be traveling again, hopefully like everybody else, or next year.
Yeah. But it's interesting because you've not gone in a traditional route of gathering this tape. You do it as a volunteer and, somebody who's working the ropes and just being there, not a member of the press, but you're able to get these guys to talk to you about their mental game.
Yeah, I do a lot of arm twisting.
actually, you're such a large, imposing figure.
Yes, right. Actually, the candidness of this, Fred, it's I'm pretty shy by nature, so it takes me some practice and warming up to kind of step up to actually, just simply asking them to, would they be interested in an interview? And so that's been an interesting journey on itself, which I'm sure we'll touch upon in the conversation today. But that being said, I've been very impressed and touched over the years by pretty much any golfer that I have approached in this, because also it has also been not just for doing the interviews for this show, but I've turned the interviews into articles that I write for golf magazines for. So, but most golfers have been very cordial and been very willing of their time. And it's been a fantastic adventure to get to know these guys as people and not just as golfers and as fans of theirs.
Have you had any negative feedback or impact? Like when you're not the press and you're doing it while they're in their tournament, you start asking questions and you've got a recorder with you. They're like, "Hey, buddy, back off. I'm working here. You can talk to me afterwards." Do you ever get that?
Well, no, because You know, being a mental game coach for pro golfers and amateurs myself, I understand what goes into their state when they are performing in their tournament. So I'm always looking to interview them actually before the tournament starts. So when they're doing practice rounds or at the range, so it gives them that opportunity when they're more relaxed and have a little bit more time rather than being in the zone focused in tournament play.
Well, I'm sorry that we don't have any fascinating tape, because not only has it been just really interesting to listen to these guys talk, but it also attracted a lot of attention when I would put names like that on the show, that the listenership would kind of jump, because it's not something I generally do, is use PGA Tour names to promote our episodes. But when you come around, I'm able to do it, and I should be paying attention to what I'm saying here. But I don't want to talk to PGA Tour players. They don't play the same game that I do. That's to me is the big difference. That's why I don't want to talk to them, because we don't play the same type of game.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, Fred. I would say in many ways they do play the same game. They're just playing it at a more heightened level. And what I mean by that is the same challenges you may have and many others who are listening to this, they go through too. And especially in the mental area, the mental game area.
Keep going. I'm fascinated. You got my attention.
You know, part of why I have been fascinated, because I've had this challenge in my own self of filled when, or I'd say haunted by doubts, fears, and insecurities most of my life, because they started as I was working my experience as a drummer and percussionist and moving forward in the musical world. And the doubts were really, really strong and negative, and just, you know, would say you stink, you're worthless, you're no good. You know, you're the only reason why you're on this stage with this band is because they're taking advantage of you because you're so young, and all kinds of negative talk that I eventually really took a about face and really examined my mind and my thinking. And I found some amazing things about that I think your listeners will be very interested to hear as we talk about today. Things are not as bad as many people would think with the negativity, with doubt. So I'm going to talk about that. And so part of this is I have just kind of organically ended up in the world of coaching peak athletes. And in that process on the mental game, I have found such rich thoughts and ways to help them. And not just, you know, so that has come from working with pro athletes and amateurs, but also just weekend warriors and helping athletes who just love whatever sport they're into. And so I've naturally taken a love for golf, because it is such a mental game, and a fascination. And so part of why I interview these guys on the pro level is to do research, to understand what are they working on, or what are they not working on? And do they got something going more than the regular golfer or not? And you'll be surprised to know that for sure they're working on things on the mental game. But I would say most of them, they don't have it all together, you know, on the mental game. And that surprises me. As much as I respect them, and you would think that they would have it more together, many don't. I mean, certainly more today than in the past. And I would say that a lot of it, we're talking about emotions, Fred, right? And being guys, we don't naturally address those and feel so comfortable with them. But what I would say is when a player, an athlete, an individual is willing to take themselves on, and be honest and candid about their fears, doubts, and insecurities. And when you are working with someone who has the ability to turn those around and understand them really quickly, your game will take off. And I've seen it time and time again, whether I'm working with an NCAA golfer or a high school player or a weekend warrior or a pro, I've seen incredible transformation happen. And I'm not saying it to try to impress you. What I am saying is I'm trying to impress upon you that looking at your mental game is really where it's at to turn your success around, to have the success you're looking for. And it becomes very exciting. I'll tell you, the players that have done that, it's been just so rewarding to see their transformation because we can see it in real time. We knew where they were a week ago, month ago, 2 months ago, or even a year ago. And many of these guys are really good technicians. They're coaches. They themselves think like, man, I'm better than what the results I'm getting on any, on a tournament or over a long haul, and it frustrates them. And then when we start talking and I start assisting them with looking at transforming the negative self-talk, they have very quick results. And that's what's so exciting to share. So today is like a day of potential, a choice day for those who are listening, I would say, Fred. And that is, are you ready to look at your mental game? And it's not like very painful by any means. It's just really being honest to say, I'm kind of tired of, these same old ruts, these patterns keep playing themselves out. Or, do I want to stay there? Or am I ready to open up and explore something new? And it's not just going to help you on your golf game. It's going to help you as an individual and deepen your relationships and also whatever kind of business you're in. This is also very helpful in just feeling more confidence, success, and fulfillment. Am I making sense, by the way?
No, not at all.
Okay, great, ladies and gentlemen.
Give them the heart. We'll ask you about that. I'm talking to Carrie Valentine of championyourinnergame.com. We're going to take a time out. We'll be back right after this. Carrie, you talked about how we're basically the professional golfers, the amateur golfers, we're all playing for the same thing. Well, okay, so whether it's a $2 NASA or a $2 million purse, let's eliminate the money for a minute, okay, on either end of it. And what I've seen over my life in watching athletes is that the gifted athletes are the ones who it's not just the gifted athletes. It's the ones that work the hardest, because they'll tell you they're not gifted, but really you have to have some gifts to get to a level where you're in the world class of athletes. And whether that's golf or baseball, football, basketball, if you're playing on the professional level, at the top ranked professional level, there's going to be some gifts that come in with that. And I'm just curious, when you say, are they ready to look at the mental game? From your experience, at what point do they start challenging their mental game? Is it when their gifts are disappearing? Or is it when they see that those gifts just aren't enough to get them to the next level? And I'm sorry to be asking yes, no questions, but I'm just curious from your perspective, when does that start to bubble up for them that they have to look at something other than just their mechanics?
Thank you, Fred. It's a great question. And to answer that, it shows up in a variety of times and ways. Let me quickly speak to that. For some that are, playing in tournament play, whether in high school or college or amateurs for that matter, they want to achieve a level of success that they more than likely haven't had yet, or they may have won a few times, but it's been a while. And certainly the idea of stringing a few wins together. So it comes up in that area of frustration, like I should be playing better and I'm not. So that's one area. The other area is, let's say you have had success and then all of a sudden you start to feel fears and doubts and insecurity of being able to sustain that level of success. That's another trigger that happens in the subconscious from my research and watching. So what you might have heard this phrase, like it's hard to get to the top, but once you have gotten to the top, it's harder to stay on the top. And the reason for that is your subconscious says and sees you like, wow, you achieved success. And then you have to step it up and then play at a whole higher new level. And that's why in the music world, we see a lot of one-hit wonders, it's called. And then we see in golfers that have, you know, players who have had successes, maybe won the Masters, but then like you never hear of them again, you know, in terms of being on the leaderboard. Or you have players who have had great success and then all of a sudden are challenged. And, you know, like
Jordan Spieth.
Yep, like Jordan Spieth and in some ways Justin Thomas, but he's beginning to turn that around. This is real. This happens and it happens in all areas. And the beautiful thing is that pressure is wanting to help you achieve more success. But when you don't understand that languaging, you don't understand that when you have either pursuing that success or achieved it, that your inner game, the doubts, fears, and insecurities are your friends trying to help you obtain the success and achieve the success you're yearning for. And when you start to look at it this way, Fred, the war becomes over. Like you start to realize and you actually start to get excited when the doubts come up of, oh, like you're going to blow this putt like you've done a million times. You realize, turn it around. What's really happening is the opportunity for you to sink that putt and obtain a new level of success. Now that's, again, whether you're hanging out with buddies and you're just betting, you know, against each other, or it happens at the pro level.
I don't know. Yeah, that was good. That was good. but I'm just, you know, the mental game, it's so interesting because Golf Smarter has always been based in the mental game, and I've always believed that there's there, but we still end up working on our mechanics, thinking that that's going to make a difference.
And it does in many respects. But when you hear the likes of Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus speak about, you know, I just didn't have it, you know, today in my technical abilities, I wasn't feeling it. You know what I mean? They'll say this or in an overall tournament. And yet what they will say, cause they will still win that tournament or have won that tournament, Fred, they'll say, I willed the ball into the hole. So what I'm saying is they understood that maybe in that particular day or tournament that they didn't have it all physically, but they then stood like kind of put their mental game in overdrive. And this really separates the men's from the boys. I would say this separates the good from the greats.
Yeah. Well, I know, but what separates the good from the greats in golf, I mean, because golf is the ultimate parody sport, right? In the sense that, if you have two wins in your career, It's like, whoa, you won twice on the PGA Tour. You don't have, I mean, Tiger changed things where he just came out and started winning all the time in his youth. And obviously we've seen where that's gone. But, you know, and then we have these expectations. When's the next Tiger coming? When's the next Tiger coming? And if somebody wins two or three events in a year, they're like, okay, we've anointed this new person here as the next wonder. But just achieving any success, being on the top of being on the top of the leaderboard on any given Sunday is not easy to achieve when there's so little room for separating yourself from the competition.
Yes. And at that level, and I would imagine the same at any level, you know, NCAA level or just, you know, kind of hanging out with your buddies level. The level of physical competition, there is probably a lot of people who are about the same, you know, at their technical ability. The secret sauce, Fred, is the mental game and having some very strong but easy to use mental game tactics that are going to help you, you know, achieve better and also just separate yourself from the rest of the crowd. And, you know, and what I would say is like, you know, some people, when I've talked to like Anubhan Lahiri, who is from India and plays on the tour, and, you know, he asked, you know, I asked him like, how do,
yeah, we had that was last year's,
yes,
tape that you brought.
Last year's tape. Right? Yeah. He shared about people in India and around the world, you know, come up to him and ask him, you know, how do I know I'm ready, you know, at this level to play the pro level? And he basically said, what have you done in the last, you know, what has your last five rounds been scoring wise? And if your last five rounds have been competitive, you know, at, you know, the pro level, then, you know, you have it, you have that potential. Now you just need to put yourself in that, and take that action in that realm. At the same time, talking to like Xander Schauffele, he told me that there were definitely challenges and changes he needed to make when he, you know, left the collegiate realm and joined like the, you know, the junior pro level. And then he had to get adjusted to that. And then from, you know, like the Korn Ferry Tour level to the PGA level, he said there were adjustments. And in terms of the quality of play, the level of getting used to fans being around him and the press and the pressure to succeed, his own plus outside, and yet there he's done it. And it's not like he's Superman or anything. He's just applied himself, just like anybody else can. So what I would say, Fred, is the exciting thing is that when you start applying yourself in the mental game and improving, it's not going to take someone who has, you know, never won, you know, like a very high pro tournament level kind of, and they're not at that level technically, but they're at the level of they play, you know, tournaments regionally or within the state or at their home course, at that level, it's going to make you better. So it's whatever kind of skill set you have, it's not, don't expect like you're going to go from can't break 100 to then in a month, you know, entering the pro tour. That's don't look at that expectation, but certainly an expectation of winning at and improving upon the level of which you're at and then moving forward. Now, I'm not saying that someone can't do that either and achieve the pro level.
But
I'm
they haven't saying, yet.
Yeah, they haven't yet. And it will take some time. So, but the main thing is not to push our feelings under the rug And a lot of times that's, we try a lot of players, a lot of coaches, kind of mentalize, you know, their feelings and try to push them under, like, oh, it didn't happen. I'm not, you know, like I never get worried when they do get worried, or if they start worrying or get anxious before a tournament, they just kind of try to override that. And I say, don't override it for 1 second. Welcome those emotions in. Acknowledge that you might feel nervous, you know, beginning a round, beginning a tournament, or putting to win the club championship on the 18th hole. But when that happens, recognize it. And then there's some processes of that will help calm yourself, neutralize those nervous feelings, and then anchor in the thoughts and the feeling that you will be successful now. And then, boom, you hit the ball and goes in the hole. And it's amazing. It's simple, Fred. It's amazingly simple, this turnaround, but it's profound.
It's as simple as boom, you hit the ball and it goes in the hole. All right. I want to ask you about these mental game tactics that you were talking about, and we'll do that right after this. Kerry, you had mentioned mental game tactics earlier, and in an earlier email that you and I exchanged, you were like, you made this comment about what a Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, Serena Williams, Kobe Bryant, Aaron Judge all have in common. Well, they've all been written up in the New York Times. Okay. So, and they're all professional athletes that have had tremendous success. But you know, Tiger Woods started out as a young man and now he's a mature adult. Tom Brady, one of the most mature professional football players in all of history. Aaron Judge, still a young man. Kobe, no longer with us. Serena is the beast of all beasts. She should have played Wonder Woman. What do these athletes have in common?
Great question, Fred. What do these athletes have
in common that, and is it their mental game tactics?
All of them have used mental game tactics to help them play at their best and master their inner game of success. Now, they've all used different tools, but they're tools that are similar to what we're talking about today. And I mean, Tom Brady is a perfect example. You know, he was never, when he was playing collegiate ball, he wasn't even first string. He wasn't, you know, he didn't get drafted at a high level. And yet before each game that he played in college, he went and talked to his coaches about his fears about that, about the game, about his doubts. And that began to turn his mental confidence around. And so when the opportunity came for him to play, for the New England Patriots, he was ready and he was gung ho. Actually, there's a story, you know, the first time he met the owner of the Patriots, he said to him, thank you so much for, you know, basically drafting me, but you've just, you know, you've just made the best choice ever for this team. Now that took cojones at that point for Tom Brady, because he was not proven at all. And yet look what happened. So what I'm saying is he had an inner confidence at that point to excel and to give him the opportunity of playing and achieving. He did. Kobe Bryant, you know, this touches upon a little bit we talked about earlier. You know, when he first came into the NBA, his friends and family were saying, hey, Kobe, you need to talk to the coach while you're sitting on the bench. You're an all-star. You should be playing there in the games. And he said to them, relax, be patient. I'm watching and I'm learning and I'm maturing and there will be the moment when I play. Obviously that happened. But not only that, Kobe, you know, he was amazing in terms of he has shared that when he won a championship, by far his most challenging opponent was never anyone on the basketball court. It was his mental game. It was his head that would always be telling him, oh, fine, you just won a championship, but you're not going to do it again. And Kobe had the will, determination, intelligence, and, you know, that fire that is so clear that people know about him, to rise above it. And he did in his own very way. So, what we're talking about is, again, these tactics, Fred, anybody could use and apply at any level of their life. And so that's why I'm just so excited to share and introduce, as well as help people improve upon their golf game as well as their life. Because, you know, when you walk up onto a course to play a tournament, and you walk up with a feeling of confidence and championship energy, and you go and play really well, and you stay committed to your process and be strong and clear through every shot, and at the end, your score takes care of itself. But you also, whether you won that tournament or, you know, didn't even come in the top 25th, if you've stayed true to your process, you feel good about yourself. And you go, okay, things didn't go my way today, but I felt and played really well. And that carries over into your life as well, in your personal relationships, in your business.
Yeah. Well, what kind of impact has this lockdown over 2020 had on golfers' mental states?
Good question.
Have you looked into that at all? Because it's like, I know personally for me, it's been a very difficult golf year for me. And I think going a little stir crazy has a lot to do with it. I love being back outside. I love going out there. But even when I'm out there, and now when I'm on the golf course, I'm wearing a mask, and I'm just not comfortable being around people at all, because we don't do that anymore. What do you think that this overall global pandemic has done to our mental state?
It certainly is. It's a great question. It certainly has given us an opportunity to look at ourselves, because, you know, obviously when it first began, COVID, such a strong shutdown, and in many places, you know, people weren't even able to play. So they were sitting with themselves, and, you know, that can have two effects. It can either make you stronger and look to appreciate when you were able to play, and get excited and work on things to, you know, be ready to play again. And then the others, you know, it could play, you know, games with their head of like, oh, you know, it's time to hang it up. Maybe it's time to give it up. And yet what I would say, I mean, from the folks that I'm coaching and talking with and working with, especially with the NCAA level, it's been kind of crazy, you know, honestly, because their schedules have been shifted. Things have been halted. Some schools, because of the financial impact COVID has had, have decided to discontinue their golf programs. On another level, a lot of these guys who are competitive found ways to continue to play as much as they could, and play at courses that maybe found ways when there wasn't like a lot of people playing, and so they were allowed to play at those times. Many places around the country, golf was the one sport you could play during this whole thing. I mean, golf, I'm not sure of the exact percentage, but the amount of rounds that have been played this year are way more than in the past years. People did get out. People have been getting out and playing. It just has, but it, in terms of competitive play, that's been a challenge. But it's coming around, you know, and it's exciting to see that. And, as much as it must be strange for the players to not have fans around, especially in the pro level, it's great that it's happening. And slowly but surely, moving forward back to, having fans back.
Yeah, that's something that it's a shame that you didn't get to go out this time to talk about it, because it's something we've discussed on the show multiple times, and I'd love to hear from tour players about it. It seems like for the veteran tour players, not having crowds out there is harder for them. And yet the younger players who are coming up playing college where you don't have crowds when you're out, we've seen a lot of success from young players this year because they're not intimidated by thousands of people standing around breathing down their backs.
So true. Definitely. A lot of the players have, said, they've been more at home, and by being at home, they're being more around their family, but a lot of their kids are distance learning. And a lot of the guys have said, I'm so grateful for my wife or my partner, because I just don't have those kind of skill sets to really the patience to work with my kids that way. So that's been an interesting observation on things. For me personally, I missed this opportunity this year because I wanted to personally congratulate Stuart Sink on winning during this past year and see his turnaround. And it's wonderful and exciting, as well as with Kevin Na winning yesterday at the Sony Open, to see these guys who have been on the tour for many, many years. And like with Kevin, I mean, his win, from his first win to his second win, were almost 7 years apart. And then he's won quite a number of times in the last few years. And so they go through this too. And something that you mentioned, a few minutes ago is like, I want to include this with the PGA pro players go through this, but also, regular guys who are just having fun, playing with their buddies, is the level of confidence. And because you don't win that often in golf, that it can really damage your level of confidence, as well as the level of your excitement to win, because you don't expect it. So if you don't expect it, you don't put the pedal to the metal to win, to anticipate winning in that particular tournament, or betting match with your buddies. And especially at the pro level, that's something, and college level, that I was surprised to see. There's almost like a level of neutrality, like, I'm just going to play, and if I win, I win. Whatever happens, happens, because you haven't had that experience. But that's what I'm saying, Fred, is like, it's simply by the desire to go in and win every single time. This is Tiger Woods' mantra, right? No matter what, he expects to win every single tournament he enters. Now, when you don't win, you got to deal with those feelings, and you got to deal with why I haven't won and what's going on. And is it, do I need to work on my driver? Do I need to work on, the technical side? Or do I also, and mostly, need to work on my mental side? Because let's use the example, and I want to see if this has happened to you or buddies of yours. Let's say you have had a string of birdies, and two or three birdies in a row, and then you get a bogey.
Okay, now you've just left my group. two or three birdies in a row, not even from four guys do we get two or three in a row, but go ahead.
All right. How about one birdie?
in a row.
Okay. And
I think I've actually done two birdies in a row once in my career. Time I've had two birdies.
Gotcha.
In a row.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, I appreciate, you sharing that. And so let's just say, I do, because let's just say you had a birdie, right? You get excited, and then, next hole, you get a bogey. And oftentimes for most people, like, they start to feel like, uh-oh, I'm losing it. Like, I might end up here, having a string of bogeys. Or the mental, right? The mental side goes, well, you got lucky with that birdie, but you know, it's going to go downhill from here. Well, it this kind of thing, right? So this happens to the kind of
curse of the birdie. Yeah, we call that the curse of the birdie.
Okay. So the curse of the birdie, I want to shift that for you in thinking to go when that birdie happened to realize, wow, that was wonderful. Now let me keep my mind focused. What is my next target? And stay focused on that. Don't get lost in the future. Cause a lot of players think like, oh, well, if I make another two birdies, this is going to be where my score is at. Boom. You're out of the moment and it usually causes havoc. So, you might think that, but then bring yourself back. And what I'm saying is then you had that birdie. Congratulate yourself, celebrate it internally, and then say, okay, fine. Now I'm ready for the next, you know, as I'm walking or getting myself to the next hole. Okay, put that in the past. Now I'm up to the next challenge, which is to where is my target? What is my intended target? And focus in on that. And also realize that from the subconscious perspective, you're going more than likely, you're going to be challenged to, can you maintain that level of excellence? And that's why, you know, you might feel some nervousness or you might hear in your head some negative chatter. Fred, what I'm inviting you and others, turn it inside out. What I mean is the opposite is true of what you hear. So if you hear like, ah, yeah, you got lucky there and got a birdie, but you're going to blow it this hole. What your subconscious is actually, if it says something like that, has that ever happened, by the way? Okay. Sure. So I invite you and everyone else who's listening to this to turn that doubt inside out to when you might hear, you're going to blow this to chuckle and laugh and go, oh my gosh, my inner guidance, my inner coach, my sparring partner, or in the Rocky world, the boxer Rocky, my inner Mickey. Hey, kid, you know, what you doing there, kid? You know, you're a bum, right? would say to Rocky. And all purposefully for Rocky to get in touch with his, you know, his fire, his inner Mamba, his confidence. And the same thing for any player. It's inviting you to be aware, and be clear that the doubt, turn it inside out, because you now have an opportunity to go to string two birdies in a row. And wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be so amazing? Mm-hmm. Right? For at any level. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening here. Your excellence is being challenged. Now I want to challenge, speaking of that, I want to challenge some mindsets for any golfer, but particularly the, you know, guys who just go out on the weekends. You got to understand for a second here that the golf architect who designed that course intended to challenge you, to expose your weakness in your play by the placement of the bunkers, the water hazards, or even the sloping putting greens. So you got to understand going into that and expect the challenge, Fred. Not be concerned about it. Actually be excited about what kind of challenges am I going to experience on this course? And then prepare yourself mentally. So here's the thing. Think about that. Instead of being shocked to have mental challenges when you play, expect them to happen. And be ready for them. And not only that, be excited about that. And then you need to apply some mental tactics with that. Okay. So, you know, any golfer, you know, at the very tournament level player is going to go with their caddy and play that golf course if they can ahead of time. Well, obviously, you know, at the pro level, but at the collegiate level, sometimes, you know, they'll just get one round to do a practice round. But again, a lot of guys, you know, the guys who really have success are taking notes, whether it's their caddy or themselves. And they're looking at where are the water hazards? What are the bunkers on those particular holes, and know how they play and adjust themselves? And these are some of also the pre-playing tactics you need to go into to have success. And take down these notes and understand them. And then not only take them down, but look at them when you're playing. You know, remind yourself when you are playing what's coming up, what's going on the next hole. Does that make any sense?
Don't get ahead of yourself, but don't get ahead of yourself. Stay with the shot. Stay in the moment.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Well, for sure.
All right.
But
you know, we talk about the mental game. We talk about swing mechanics. We talk about a lot of things on Golf Smarter. And that's why we've brought in Golf Smarter Mulligans, our second podcast, to bring back the old conversations that are still valid. And this week is talking about something different. So let's take a time out and hear what's going to be on Golf Smarter Mulligans this week. Yep, that's right. This week on Golf Smarter Mulligans, we talk about a topic that could easily fall into position, grip, and alignment's lost or forgotten sibling, or maybe even it's just the black sheep of the pre-swing family, and that's tempo. Our guest is one of the world's leading experts on the golf swing tempo. That's John Novosel. Now, at the time of the interview, we were talking about a gadget that he had just released called the Tour Tempo, but now it's also available as an app. But here's a short tidbit from my conversation with John that may surprise you. Does this mean that Tiger's tempo for his 8-iron and his driver are different, or they're the same?
They're the same. From a full swing, you should have the same tempo with your driver, which is the elapsed time from takeaway to the top of the backswing, and then the elapsed time from the top of the backswing down to impact. And so you should have the same elapsed time for anything for a full pitching wedge through the driver.
When I watch a guy like Ernie Els, who seems to be as smooth as silk, he seems to be moving slower, but he has tremendous swing speed, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you brought Ernie up. He's our perfect illustration of this. I got a question for you and your listeners. Between Ernie Els and Greg Norman, who has the quicker swing tempo? Obviously, anybody that's seen them both swing would say Greg Norman, correct?
Yeah.
Guess what? It's Ernie Els.
That's episode 92 of Golf Smarter Mulligans featuring John Novosel of TourTempo.com. It's being released this Friday. Both Golf Smarter and Golf Smarter Mulligans are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe. And when you do, you'll be notified immediately when a brand new episode of either has downloaded to your favorite podcast app. Carrie, I got to believe that you talk about achieving success, winning on the tour, and then trying to do it again. Going, you know, from underdog to champion. But is it easier on the mental aspect of it to be the underdog, to chase, than being chased? Or does that not even enter in the, is that just media hype, and it's not relevant to a player, whether they're, you know, the underdog or not?
Oh, I think it definitely does. It's a great, important issue. And a part of that, Fred, it depends on the personality of the person, and where to they're at, in their, you know, in their comfortability of being, in a competitive situation on top of the leaderboard. Part of that comes from experience. You know, if it's your first time, happening, there's a greater chance you're going to feel some nerves coming down the stretch. If you've been in that more often, you'll probably have more confidence with that. And yet, you know, taking it from pro players who maybe in the past have had success, but it's been eluded them for a long while, and then being back in the hunt, kind of, so to speak, you know, they can get nervous in that respect too. And so this, what I'm saying, it happens to us all at any level. It's how we approach it and how we address it. So once again, I want to reiterate that if you are feeling nerves, that or nervous in any level, this is your subconscious telling you. It kind of is knocking on your internal emotional door and it's saying, hey, buddy, you're about to have success. Are you ready for it? Do you want it? Are you ready to grab it? And are you skilled? Do you have the tools to turn this around? Now, it never tells us that, anything even close to that, but that's what I'm telling you. Interpret it this way and then have some mental game tactics to help you with it. So whenever you are feeling nervous, I always share with people, get excited. And I know that may sound counterintuitive, but what I mean by that, Fred, first step is if you're feeling nervous, there's a reason for it. And what is happening is you're about to step into a new level of your play. That opportunity is about to happen. Then the question is, are you willing and ready to step into it? Now, I never said it feels comfortable. I never said you have to like the feelings of nervousness or the feeling of gut, you know, sweaty palms or, you know, compression in your head. I understand all these experiences and feelings, but all of these feelings are trying to head you off at the pass. They're trying to let you know success is about to happen, but you have to turn it around. You have to take a few steps and neutralize the feelings and then turn that moment around so you feel the confidence. And it's possible. It's very, very possible. And part of the process, too, is that, you know, research and science has shown for most things in terms of turning our neural pathways around, like a pattern that I've had a negative chatter for a period of time, a pattern like, you know, oh, I'm going to blow this putt or I'm never going to win, even though I want to, things like that. It takes approximately about 30 days of consistent looking and addressing that pattern to literally kind of pull out the pathway in our brain where it roots in that negative pattern, and it kind of neutralizes, and then by doing so, it then rewires into a different part of the brain for the positivity for the success to happen. So what I'm saying, this doesn't, even those who apply themselves, this doesn't change in a blink, you know, 1 second. But it does change quickly if you apply yourself continuously. And what I would say is don't fret, don't worry, and don't ever worry like, I'm not doing good enough, or I slipped today and I forgot to do my process. You got later in the round or later tomorrow to get yourself back on track. That's another thing I would say, Fred, that really makes a difference between pro players and amateurs is a lot of them have learned to at least be patient. And you'll hear that often. If they start off the day with two bogeys, or, you know, they've had, you know, a back to the string of birdies and then get two bogeys, they will say a lot of times that have success, I've just had patience. You know, I couldn't get frustrated because I played poorly that hole, but I stuck to it, and then they end up winning. Case in point was Kevin Na this past week, you know. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things we hear more and more and more from every single golfer, and I'm talking about on the amateur level on our recreational side, is consistency. You know, almost every instructor I talk to, people come in and say, I want more distance. I want more consistency. And they want it to be achieved rapidly. But let's just pretend that it's incremental. If we could just be 1% better each time we go out, only 1%, right? We're not going to see huge changes, but just feeling a little bit better about our game. Is that a physical thing, or is that 1% the mental element?
It's both. And the mental is going to help you get the distance you're looking for. And when you have that confidence, again, with the folks I train and work with, when they complete what I call the champion in your game kind of system, the five steps, there's at the end what I call an anchor. That it basically is a combination of a mindset visualization with holding where you want that ball to land and that target. And it happens to me, and it happens to just about every player I work with. There's almost a childlike giddiness when it first happens of like, okay, I set this intention. I put my anchor in. I had my intended target, you know, whether that's, you know, for putting or for driving, and the ball went there. Oh my gosh. This was so exciting. Like, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
But there is something so about, yeah, the mental influencing the physical. For then the physical, you hit the ball and the ball goes to where you were intending. I think that's just amazing, simply amazing and incredible. And when you do these things, the ball ends up more than not where you wanted it to go. What would that be like, Fred?
That would be the reason why we go out. it would be the kind of thing that you come home and your partner says, "How was your day today?" I was like, "Oh, it was great." My wife hasn't heard that in a long time. I was like, "It was fine. It was okay. It was good." Yeah. "Did you have fun?" "Yeah, I had fun." "Okay, great." Oh, Carrie, you have an interesting offer you'd like to make our audience, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I do want to just say before that, yes, 1% does make a difference. And if you apply yourself 1% every day, you are going to see profound results over a period of a week, a month, or a few months. So with that in mind, I'm excited to share with folks who are this conversation has brought an interest for them. And that is, I would love the opportunity to share with you a free mini video course on how to turn your doubts, fears, and anxieties around so you can have more success, confidence, and fulfillment on the golf course, in your life, and in your business.
That is incredibly generous of you. How do people get in touch with you to do so?
Super. Because I'm just beginning to launch this and I'm just excited to offer this to the folks, the best way, why don't you email me at Carrie, C-A-R-Y, at championyourinnergame.com. So inner is I-N-N-E-R. That's what the word I'm saying. So Carrie at championyourinnergame.com and put in the subject line golf smarter. And when you do that and I receive it, I'll send you the link for the free video mini course on how to quickly transform your fears and have the success and confidence you're looking for and feel that undulation, that excitement that you're playing better and well and gives you more excitement to go out and play even more and challenge yourself to maybe enter some tournaments and competitive tournaments that you wish to do, but you just didn't feel you were up to it. I'm telling you, I see it time and again that's, you know, that kind of person comes to me, whether an amateur recreational level or the, you know, top elite level. And we see the transformation happen and it's waiting for you as well. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Awesome. Again, it's Carrie at championyourinnergame.com. Send Carrie the email to that address and I'll put this information in the show notes, but make sure you put the subject golf smarter in your email. You can give him some feedback on what you heard in this week's episode, or just say, "I'd love to get that free mini video course from you." Carrie, it was great to talk to you again. Happy New Year. Aloha, my friend.
Aloha, Fred. Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor for me, and I always look forward to our conversation. So I greatly, greatly appreciate it. And much, much continued success for you and your family, Fred.
A little follow-up on an episode we had a few weeks ago about the Perfect Motion app. I love that email that you sent me. Are you kidding me? A former PGA Tour pro and winner looking at my swing? Insane. I'm speechless. Yeah, I know how you feel. Well, as for me, I've been using the app when I'm in the yard taking practice swings, both without the ball and then hitting balls into a net. And the next day, there's an email from Chip Beck with tips, advice, video, and encouragement to keep moving forward. It seems my recurring problem is that Perfect Motion has detected a reverse pivot in my swing. It's a pretty common error. At least now that I recognize it, I'm seeing it in a lot of people I play with. Yesterday, I received an email both from Chip and then another one from CEO Rich Kozlowski reporting that they have brought on another teacher onto the Perfect Motion stable of teachers who had this remarkably simple fix for a reverse pivot. The fix is one thing, but his explanation of what it feels like in a reverse pivot is something I've never heard from any teacher we've ever had on the show. So I've urged Rich that I want to interview this new guy, Allie Taylor. So stay tuned for that. Also, I'm going to try to get Dr. James Ragonet. He was with us a long time ago talking about his book, Golf: Three Noble Truths, on Golf Smarter. We also republished it as episode number 30 of Golf Smarter Mulligans. Now, his newest book is called Your Inner Golf Guru: The Science of Rethinking, Relearning, and Revamping Your Golf Swing. Makes my head want to explode. You too? Too much, right? No, 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 no. It looks at the difference between systematic and analytical change and how that relates to improving your golf swing. I didn't think I'd be able to get into that stuff, but I'm really enjoying this book and looking forward to speaking with him soon. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions of what you'd like to hear on an upcoming interview, I'd love to hear from you. So use @GolfSmarter for social media. But if you want a quick response, just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.